Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Movie Geeks United. Another great week. Last week, we're coming off a great show from last week when we played wall-to-wall film scores. One of my favorite shows.
Yeah, you know, it was awesome. I mean, that was a really good show. I was really happy, you know, when we got off the air, we were done with that and everything, and it was just really well done. Now, you said it was a good show because we didn't have to talk a lot.
Right. That's exactly why it was a good show. All I had to do the whole show was press play.
I had so much trouble doing it the other night on my show.
Right. Well, no such luck tonight. No such luck tonight. We're actually going to have to work.
We're going to earn it.
The first hour, of course, you're clicking on this link to tonight's show, and you see Dustin Hoffman tribute show. And that is true. The second half of the show, we will be reviewing some of the career highlights of Dustin Hoffman, as we did last Sunday night with last Sunday show with Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman, yeah.
Yeah, kind of an informal roundtable discussion of some of his great career highlights. We'll be doing that in the second half of the show. The first half, we'll be doing our movie news and movie reviews roundtable with Jerry, yourself, and myself.
Uh-huh.
And our new fellow movie geek in training. Our good friend Rick is here too. Hey,
yeah,
Rick.
Welcome, Rick.
Hey, thank you.
So an exciting night. So let's get right down to it. This is the big news from this past weekend. I have not yet seen it. Rick, have you seen Iron Man 2 yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, so Jerry, I know you've seen it.
Yeah, of course I've seen it. Jesus Christ, everyone on the internet knows I've seen it. Everyone in the world knows I've seen it. Yeah, I liked it. I know, like, I'm like the oddball here, but I actually enjoyed it. You know, I like the first one a lot. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but I still think it's a damn good film. Having said that, I just really could watch Robert Downey Jr. do anything at this point. If it wasn't,
right.
If he's not in the movie, you don't.
Well, he was doing anything and everything back in the 80s, so.
Oh, well, yeah. I kind of wish I was there on a Less Than Zero set. Okay, you didn't hear me say that, or you go pool for that matter. But. He's awesome in that film, in this as Tony Stark. I mean, I can't imagine anyone else playing him.
Mickey Rourke. Does Mickey Rourke's performance kind of outclass the movie? Like, is he working too hard for something that he shouldn't be working that hard for?
Well, here's the thing. Everyone's read the Entertainment Weekly article with the interview of the actors and with him and how sort of like, you know, his big comeback film really is Sin City, based on a graphic novel. And he says this thing, well, he didn't really prepare for his role he's not a big comic book person or anything. He didn't prepare for the role of Whiplash, who I believe his real name is Ivan Danko in a film. He didn't, you know, read other comic books. He just did it. He has his own, he brings this method acting with him. I think he's good in the film. There's been a charge. I mean, one of the criticisms is that there's too much going on in the film. There are too many villains, but just too many characters.
Yeah, which is typical with comic book sequels.
I don't think it hurt here. I thought everyone, if there's a complaint, like Scarlett Johansson, I think doesn't really have much to do. She's more or less eye candy in the film.
Right.
I could dispute that. I think she does a good job, and they're setting everything up. This film is setting itself up for this Avengers movie that's going to come out down the line.
Whedon thing, yeah.
All these movies are setting themselves, like with Captain America, Thor, they're all setting themselves up for this Avengers movie, which better be really good the way they're using these films essentially as like building blocks towards that. I think that's
right.
really true in the Hulk movie more than anything else.
Is the end of did you stay past the credits? There's allusion to Thor at the end of that.
Yes, it's been a week, almost a week. If you don't know about it, everyone spoiled it. I think anyways on the internet. So yeah,
right.
Thor is the thing at the end.
And is it like Robert Downey Jr. talking to Kenneth Branagh saying, "What the hell are you doing something like Thor for?"
No, nothing quite like that. No, nothing. Yeah, well, that is, you do a double take when you hear Kenneth Branagh. You're wondering, what the hell is he?
Yeah, exactly. It's the dumb teenager's Hamlet, I guess.
Like, well, here's the thing. You talk about Mickey Rourke outclassing the movie. I mean, Kenneth Branagh doing Thor. I mean, guy did Henry V, Dead Again, Hamlet. He's like, you know, really
he clearly wants a career resurrection, and Marvel is one of the outlets now for that.
Yeah, so I mean, he wants it. So, well, I'm very curious to see what he's going to do with Thor. I mean,
but he's not in it. I don't know that I don't know that it's like a director's resurrection. I don't know if that really happens. I don't know.
I honestly don't know. It's one of those things that I think about him. It's like, what is he going to bring to it? That, I guess, is the big thing.
I don't know. Soliloquies, I guess.
God, if Thor starts drinking out of soliloquies.
Right. He's going to break the fourth wall.
Oh, God, no.
Rick, what is your opinion on that 1980, what year was it? I can't remember the year. Maybe you can tell me once I tell you the movie. The classic 80s movie, Fright Night.
I knew we were going to talk about this.
I mean, I liked the film okay, but, I mean, it's not one of my favorites from those days. I don't remember the year it was either, no.
It
was
85, 86.
Yeah, mid-80s. So you're not too precious about the idea of them remaking it. You're okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, granted, I'm not into the whole remake thing, but no, it doesn't offend me in any way, no.
Well, I don't know if – I haven't been able to find many people that are offended by it. But I hope they keep. I mean, they're not people picketing outside. It's not a great issue. It's not an issue like abortion or something. But I am really, my interest is piqued by the casting, and I would roll my eyes at it if not for the casting. Colin Farrell cast as the Chris Sarandon role, which
right.
is the vampire next door. And I love Colin Farrell. I love him more and more. The more I see him, the better I think he gets.
I saw a movie with him this weekend that was just incredibly beautiful.
You talking about the Neil Jordan movie?
Yeah.
That was
just incredible. He like you said, every role he gets better and better. And I was just
blown away
by that film.
But that's exciting. So he's a good quality actor. And then you have Toni Collette, another great actress, playing the mother. I don't know who's playing the Roddy McDowell role.
I think that's what we're waiting. Oh, God. Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, God. But
Mike
the name Alan Rickman has been tossed around.
Oh, that would be a good choice.
And he's been on the show. And so is Chris Sarandon. So there you go. Any chance I have to plug my show. And so is the director of Fright Night. Wasn't that directed by Todd?
Todd Holland?
Yes.
Todd Holland?
Yeah, he's been on the show a couple of times. Look at our Fright Night connection. I mean, it's all there.
We're all over it. I mean,
so essentially, we broke this story forever ago.
Yes,
we did. But I'm excited about it. I mean, not excited about it. It's not like the Expendables to me, but I think that it'll be a lot of fun.
Right. Oh, I think so. Oh, I definitely think it'll be a lot of fun.
And this is something, okay, let me read one of these emails. We're going to read some listener email tonight.
I didn't know we got emails.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to address one particular kind of email that I get all the time. So hopefully I'll squash getting any more of them. But let me look at this email, because this ties in with Fright Night and that kind of thing. No, it really doesn't. Hang on, I'm looking at the wrong... Okay. All right. It's a long letter here. My name is Tom. I'm a film student and a big fan of your show. I'm 23, from Melbourne, Australia, and have been listening to Movie Geeks United for over a year, downloading every show as they're released and adding them to my iPod. I have an idea for a Summer of 1985 tribute show you guys could do to follow up the great shows you did for Summer of 83 and 84. Summer of 85 tribute show. I think you should definitely feature Rambo 2 as one of the films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd love to hear either an interview with one of the producers or Steve Berkoff. I have never heard anything from Berkoff on his role of Podovsky. I'm sorry, it's been years since I've seen it. I haven't memorized the pronunciation of the character.
Right, right.
Name.
No, I know he means.
But neither did Stallone, so there you go. And he was fantastic in it. I have a feeling Stallone and he established rapport on the Beverly Hills Cop shoot before Sly left it to pursue Cobra. This is like not even halfway through this letter. Berkoff obviously stayed on the production of Beverly Hills Cop to play the main villain, and Sly brought him back for Rambo 2 to play the main villain as well. I have loved the Rambo 2 since childhood and would love to learn more about it. Unfortunately, Jerry Goldsmith, George Cosmatos, Fred Brown, and Jack Cardiff have passed away. However, it'd be cool to hear stories and anecdotes from someone who was involved in the film. It could be an amazing show if you get him on. Maybe Spies Like Us or Pee-wee's Big Adventure could also be included as part of the other movies of the summer. Without a doubt. Secondly, I'd love to hear a tribute show to Albert Brooks. This is an interesting suggestion.
That is.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic to feature films on the show like Real Life, Modern Romance, and Lost in America. It'd be great to have a key collaborator from each of these movies, then maybe even an interview with Albert himself. And all I'm doing is I'm reading this, I'm thinking of all the work I have to do to put Tom's show together.
I would.
Lastly, it'd be fantastic to have a tribute show to the films of John Belushi. You could get John G. Avildsen on the show to talk about Neighbors and discuss exactly what the film is about and his vision of the project when going into it. Also for the underrated gem Continental Divide,
mm-hmm.
Director Michael Apted, writer Lawrence Kasdan, it'd be great to learn more about these films. Old Boyfriends with Talia Shire as well.
Great movie.
Maybe you could get her on the show to talk about the film. Thanks for reading, and I hope you get back to me. Thanks for the great work, and I look forward to hearing more in the future. I think if you did either of these shows, they'd be great, and you'd do a fantastic job at it. All the best, Tom. All right, well, I can't speak for the Albert Brooks or the John Belushi, but we'll throw those in the pot. But
yeah.
we are working on the Summer of 85 right now. I'm starting to send out invites for
Can
guests.
Can I throw out two movies for that I'd like to talk about?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
The Emerald Forest and Mad
exactly.
Max on Thunderdome, I'd like
yeah.
to throw in there.
So we're sending to Borman and Powers Booth.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I've already submitted to Chuck Norris.
Right.
For Code of Silence.
That's right, okay.
If you remember, that was a well-reviewed Chuck Norris movie. It wasn't an Invasion USA.
Isn't that Andrew Davis who directed?
It was, and I submitted to him too.
Package. We talked about the Hackman movie, The Package, before like doing The Fugitive and things
right.
like that. He made like a lot of great action films, action thrillers during that time period.
Yeah, and as is customary when I send out interview invites, I've already gotten my first no from Walter Hill. They say he's busy working on something. I'm like, really? I know that.
Another 48 hours?
Yeah.
Another 48 hours. But looking over the movies that came out that summer, and really it was a trend throughout the 80s.
Fletch,
yeah. I mean, there's some great movies, but you think the big movies, the big movie was Back to the Future, Summer of 85.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the classic cult, which has become like a cult film now, The Goonies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you look on and on and on during those years, and they made great teenager movies back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they don't do now. I mean, they make good kids movies now that adults can enjoy, but they've lost the art of making the teen movie. And I think, this is my theory, it has to do with an innocence that is missing.
Well, it's let me just because a lot of the movies I think we're talking about movies about teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, a Teen Wolf. You could go on and on in the 80s. Those kind of movies.
Because I think the movies. I mean, yeah. The only one I can really think of off the top of my head that is super bad is the only one I can think of that
okay.
works.
All right, all right. And the amusement park,
no,
the Adventureland, and that.
Adventureland skews like more toward the 20s. You know, a lot of the movies that we're actually talking like that we do like that we talk about on this show do skew more in the 20s, 20 something.
Right. Right.
You are right. There is something because let's look at the one that came out last summer. That was I watched a couple months ago on DVD. Chris Columbus film. I Love You, Beth Cooper.
Right.
It was a nothing. This just didn't work. I mean, it's sort of like After Hours for Idiots almost.
That's great. That should be on the poster.
I thought it was something that it's supposedly based on like a book that everyone likes and everything. You know, you watch it and you're just like, but you are right, Jamie. They make great movies for kids, great like family films for the most part, not all the time, but there is a teen movie. You're right. That was something that really, especially under John Hughes and in the 80s, that was
right.
golden.
Right.
Just golden.
If John Hughes made movies in the same tone that he made them in the 80s, or any of these guys, but John Hughes is the poster child for it.
Right.
Would he be able to get away with that, Rick? Would people laugh at these movies now as being naive, do you think?
No, I think that today's teenagers still love the John Hughes films. I mean, my students still love Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink, so... I think those movies definitely struck a chord as far as, you know, being a realistic view or, you know, a somewhat realistic view of growing up as far as, you know, the feelings that everyone encounters. So I think they would still be popular today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with Rick there. I have a question or a theory. The reason is that a lot of the movies that we loved as teenagers and the people our age who are making films are making movies more geared to people in their 20s and 30s, and they're not really about high school or junior high. And the ones that are, I guess the thing I'm thinking of, I don't even know if it qualifies as, I don't know what grade, the one that came out a couple of months ago, Diary of a Wimpy Kid or something.
Right. Which was popular.
The only one I can think of, and I finally did a breakdown and watch it, last year was Drill Bit Taylor, and based on the John Hughes story. Speaking of John Hughes,
right?
You know, you and that wanted to be so much like Superbad in some regards that it kind of fumbled. Even though
right.
it had a good cast, it's got a lot of people like Owen Wilson and Danny McBride in it who I like. It's just not that great. So I think
here's what we're looking at for summer of '85, and actually Walter Hill had two movies that summer. And maybe this is why he said no, because they couldn't have been his happiest moments. Brewster's Millions as director. And then he produced Rustler's Rhapsody. Remember that cowboy slapstick?
A boss of mine, an old boss of mine. That was one of his favorite movies.
I did always enjoyed that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I was like, you know, 12. Then who can forget Jim Cotta?
But that movie's influence is seen in a lot of films, though.
There Will Be Blood. Yeah, I see it, too.
No, I was looking at that movie, that Christian Bale movie, Equilibrium. But that's just
right.
Me.
View to a Kill.
We got to do that, man.
Oh, wow.
The Goonies came out the same day as Perfect. what a title that really does not describe the actual film.
No.
Daryl,
oh,
Cocoon.
Wow.
Always remember that scene where, because he's a computer, right? The kid's a computer
right,
or whatever,
right,
and
right.
he goes to the ATM machine and gets all the money out. I always wanted to do that, but
Explorers, Silverado, great movie. The Emerald Forest, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Back to the Future is the big one. Pale Rider and St. Elmo's Fire. I'd like to talk to Shoemaker.
I'd love to talk about all these films.
Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
That's
yeah,
right.
Thunderdome is, yeah, I mean, these are all, it really was, when you look at it.
Fright Night came out that summer.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in August of that year,
oh,
so
wow.
It's 85. Came out the same day as Weird Science.
Oh, yeah, you got to, And remember, that whole summer, you had the Explorers, you had Weird Science, you had My Science Project, Real Genius.
Real Genius, yes.
Yeah. Explorers is important, though. Explorers, you know, takes on a whole...
And Teen Wolf. And Better Off Dead. Oh, my
Better
God.
Better Off Dead.
That's,
you have so many
that's what I'm talking about, the teenage movies.
Yeah. And you, look, you had, you know, you mentioned movies. This is when John Cusack, a lot of the great movies that in that time period that he, I mean, not the stuff he's done later on is awesome too, but he was really did Better Off Dead. Then a couple of years later, Say Anything. And what is it, the other one that he's in? Is it The Sure Thing?
Yeah.
And that these are all great movies.
And then sticking out like a sore thumb. It, well, first of all, The Man with One Red Shoe, that was on TV last night.
I remember seeing that, yeah.
Isn't that like the first Tom Hanks movie that was pre-Bachelor Party?
No, that's after Bachelor Party. That's you.
Oh. Well, I have no idea.
But
and then sticking...
Jerry started to say something about Explorers. What was he going to say?
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say, you know, you have to look at that movie like any movie with River Phoenix. You have to look at it in a... new light, because I sometimes still have to kick myself that, you know, he's not here anymore. And I know it's been a long time since he passed away, but for what he did, for the time period that he was making films, even something like Explorers, which was sort of, I think, was written off because it came too close to The Goonies or something,
yeah.
or that, with
yeah.
all those other
yeah.
films, it's actually a pretty good movie, and it's just nice to go back, because that's all we don't have that much of River Phoenix, so anything that we can go back and watch,
right.
to me, is a treat. So
I thought the first half of that movie was so strong, and then but the last half was kind of a letdown. But it's a
mm-hmm.
good movie to go back. The music's great too, Jerry Goldsmith's score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you had everyone. I mean, this summer, the music alone when you're talking about just the movies we mentioned is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are some interesting ones in this summer of largely teenage fare. I mean, The Emerald Forest sticks out, but something like Pritzi's Honor is a summer movie.
Awesome.
Oh, wow.
Awesome movie.
And Year of the Dragon. And whatever we do, we'll be talking about Year of the Dragon. I love that
movie. Oh, God. We could just spend that. Dude, we could just do a whole show about that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Someone started a fight during that movie when we went to go see it.
I remember I was, 85. I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
We were vacationing at the beach. And we always took in a movie as a family. So I said, let's go see this Year of the Dragon. It's a Michael Cimino movie. And they're like, okay. I said, but it's going to be really graphic and kind of harsh. And you saw, like, full frontal female nudity in it.
That whole shot.
That was great.
That
was the whole point of that story.
My brother, when we watched that, I've rented that constantly. On videotape after seeing it in the theaters and when it came out. My brother always said the only reason he made that movie was that shot of the skyline, the morning skyline with her in the morning. And it's a beautiful shot, not just her.
You know the other, speaking of which, you know the other full frontal female nudity movie from that period was Woman in Red, the Gene Wilder movie.
Oh,
Kelly
LeBrock. Right, mm-hmm.
Man, memories. We have to do a show about
full frontal nudity.
Yeah, it'll be 2 hours about Bruce Willis.
It's the Color of Night tribute show. It's a show that you've all been waiting for.
Oh, that's a great idea. Anyway, so it's going to be an interesting summer to recap. And when we did last summer of 84, we thought, well, 85 looks pretty anemic. But these are fun. A lot of them are very fun movies.
It's a great. I mean, we just named off, I think, like 20 really good films. I mean.
Yeah,
so.
I think so, too. So let me get to this other letter here. I'm bringing it up. This is from Richard Perry. He says, I saw there's going to be a Dustin Hoffman show tonight. If you get a chance, don't forget to mention Straight Time.
Yes.
I think it's one of his better films and performances. It usually gets overshadowed by all the other films he did in the 70s. Also, earlier drafts of the screenplay were written by Michael Mann, which isn't surprising since there are more than a few similarities with his first feature, Thief.
Mm-hmm.
The Hackman Show was really great. Keep up the good work.
We'll
be talking about Straight Time later, but we've covered it on the show with the wife of the editor of the film, Bobby Osteen, and we had the Safdie brothers, who are a filmmaking duo, on a couple of months ago, and they're crazy about the Straight Time, and it's an interesting movie in that it was the movie that Dustin Hoffman was going to direct himself.
That's right.
Until the cinematographer said no, don't do it.
No, but it was. I finally watched it a couple years ago because it came out on DVD finally, and I rented it from Netflix. And this must have been like 5-6 years ago. Great movie, just really awesome movie. It's based on an Edward Bunker novel, so.
And it's actually his favorite performance of his own, Hoffman.
Really, I did not know that.
It's usually the neglected children that are the artist's favorite, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me tell you about another certain kind of email that I get very often. And I've never said this on the show before. I get emails all the time that say, Jamie, could you help me out? I have a show of my own. Could you give me the contact for this person or that person? So let me address all these emails tonight.
I actually want to chime in about this, too.
Yeah. The answer is no. And it might be, you might think it's me being pompous or arrogant or what have you, but look, we have had no one helping us get these people on the show or get contacts or anything like that. We've gone through the avenues that we have to go through. So my first point is, if you really want to be a successful show, a litmus test of this is how resourceful you are. It's out there, this information. If you essentially deserve to have these people on, you'll find the right means of having them on. Secondly, I can't recommend these. I feel like these people have put their trust in me by doing my show, this little podcast, or our show. And for me to, like, give the address to someone and not know whether they're going to say, hey, Movie Geeks United recommended and blah, 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 and I don't know you, so you might completely flub the interview, and that makes me look bad if, you know, there's a chance of that. So I'm just being honest. So the answer to all of these emails will be no. Get it yourself.
Well, it's not just that. As a member of the filmmaking community around here, and one of the listservs is the, you know, it's a nationwide, actually international organization, the Women in Film and Video. You get these emails on the listserv that so do you have so and so's contact information?
Right.
How do you, and I never respond because I don't have it. First of all, hey, I don't have it. They don't want to talk to me, you know. So, but it's just something I see. I don't know how you. It is. There's a. The problem with, I think the other thing you have to bring up with this is not just with the, you know, if you flub the interview, but what if that person, all of a sudden the other thing is, and I get this too, well, hey, could you send them a script or something? No, we can't do that.
Right,
we can't, or ask them for a job. One of the things I got constantly when we interviewed Francis Ford Coppola, did he offer you a job? I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
It was a radio show interview, not a job interview.
No, but I got that constantly from, like, people all over the place.
Well, and Coppola's the big one that they all ask, how do I get in touch with Coppola? And actually, Coppola's contact information is among the easiest to find.
Yeah, you can actually go to his, and if you're in the San Francisco area,
go to his website.
You can actually go just to his office, probably, and he'd probably love to talk to you.
So that tells me right there that they lack the initiative. They don't deserve to get Coppola. If they can't even investigate for 5 seconds to find this contact.
If you are diehard and persistent, you'd be amazed at not just in the movies, but I know people who are comic book writers and artists, you know, trying to break into business. And if you are persistent, the people in the business, in your industry, if you're persistent, they will want to talk to you. But you can't. You got to be cool and persistent, and if you're polite, I think you'll get somewhere. But the thing is, it's just the contact information, people's contacts that used to be Rolodexes, now it's your email list. You just can't – it's a violation of trust is what Jamie's saying.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they understand that we go through their publicists like 9 times out of 10. We don't go through the talent
themselves. We go through their
gatekeepers. That's not how it's done. Yeah.
And if you follow that, I mean – there are a lot of people doing this, and if you go through the publicist or the agent, you will. I think you will with some of them. We don't get through a lot of the time. I mean, there are times where there are people we still can't get through to. But if you are, you know, professional and not a troll, you will have luck.
Yeah, as we've proven many times.
Yeah.
So not we haven't proven that we're not trolls, but we've proven
trolls.
That we can
we're
be
not,
lucky.
We're not trolls.
Cannes Film Festival began, and the big opening movie was Robin Hood, and what a tepid way to open up Cannes Film Festival, because nobody is crazy about this. It's getting poor to mediocre reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars, and if someone as generous as Roger Ebert gives your movie 2 stars, it's ho-hum. I mean, definitely.
Yeah, I read the Hollywood Reporter review, I think it was this morning or last night, and they said they sort of like, while it's action-packed, they took out all the things that make it a Robin Hood.
The fun of it. The fun of it, yeah.
And they took,
yeah.
I mean, it's like they took out everything. I mean, he's not interested in stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Nothing like that. It's absolutely nothing. So
but still, I'm sure it'll be way successful. People want to see Gladiator 2, so they'll check it out. And also American films in the festival, high-profile American films, Wall Street 2 has yet to premiere, and Fair Game, the new Doug Liman movie about the Valerie Plame controversy, plays fairly late in the festival, and I would have thought that would be a perfect opening kind of movie to get word of mouth going, something with a bit of political controversy attached to it. Not something like Robin Hood. But if you look at the films at this year's festival, nothing stands out, and there are much fewer films than in recent years. I mean, the thing that I always love about Cannes is hearing reports every year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year it was Antichrist and Inglourious Basterds,
right.
And people just outraged. I mean, I love it how people could be outraged by a movie, and they're
right,
just
right.
They're,
well,
people are losing their shit over a movie, and I love that, but there's
nothing
like that on the horizon here.
Do we know, besides Robin Hood, I know it's not a big year for American films.
No, Woody Allen's film will be there.
Okay, Woody Allen, all right.
So, you're right, not a big year for American films. Foreign films, I don't know what the high-profile foreign film selections are. I think they really hurt by not having Malick's movie. That would have been a major story.
That would have been very big.
Speaking of controversy, should we talk about The Human Centipede?
I haven't watched it yet. I want to watch it on demand one of these nights, but I haven't had time. But I still got to watch. I still want to watch Survival of the Dead.
I watched that. Oh, I tried to watch that. I just
you tried. I watched 3 very good movies on demand though this week.
So we shouldn't talk about The Human Centipede before
we
get into these.
But did you watch it? Did you watch?
No, it's on demand. Rick, have you heard about this movie, The Human Centipede?
Yes, but I have not seen it either. Mm.
I don't even know if I should describe it.
Describe it.
It's
it's horrifically gross.
A mad scientist that sews 3 women's mouths to the other's anus to make a human centipede, and so when one ingests something, the other... You get the idea. I've basically seen that movie. It's called Geely. But... But this movie is on demand now, and I can't watch these movies. And a movie, I can't watch something that just exists to be unpleasant. There has to be something else there. Like, and even a movie that, like an Audition.
Mm-hmm. But Audition.
Which is a great movie of the genre. And I can absolutely tell you in detail and assert its value and its worth and its artistry. It's not something that I seek out and that I enjoy watching. It's something with me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. No, I'm curious about it. But I don't know. If it's just there to be unpleasant and just a chore in that sense, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I keep hearing so many, like, it's all over the place. So the reactions.
It's probably I mean, I'm sure. All right. What are the 3 movies that you wanted?
Okay, the
Neil
Jordan one, Odine, which I just thought was wonderful. The Scott Kahn and James Kahn movie Mercy, which I liked a lot. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I enjoyed it thoroughly. Where he plays a writer in Los Angeles, and it's just nice to see him and his father act together. I thought. I really liked that. And the other one I saw was The Good Heart with Paul Dano and Brian Cox.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which was wonderful. Another just really great.
Brian Cox, man.
Watching them together again, and it's been so long after that movie Lie, but watching them, they have a very good chemistry together. And it's,
man, I have
really
been in touch with his assistant forever, Brian Cox. And I can never seem to get him. Since Zodiac, I've tried to get Brian Cox on.
He's just incredible.
It's time to get my Cox on. And
yeah.
I can't do it. I saw something. Rick, did you see Edge of Darkness, the Mel Gibson?
Yes. Yeah, I liked it.
Did you like it?
I thought it was a decent movie. I'd give it 2.5 stars, I guess. Yeah.
I would, too. And I made a comment on our Facebook that said that this is the kind of movie that a 2.5-star rating was invented for.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good, solid, sturdy, unsurprising movie.
Yeah.
You go in and you get what you pay for, a pissed-off Mel Gibson.
And that's what we all want, a pissed-off Mel Gibson. I think I said I liked it when I talked about it, when I saw it. I did like it. It is really strange that I've become Mel Gibson's champion, but it just is. But I liked it. I like Ray Winstone a lot in it, too.
Right.
Yeah, he was really good in it, actually.
Yeah.
He was one of the best parts of it. I agree.
And Danny Huston was great as
Smarmy.
He does that so well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was interested in the conspiracy plot,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I like to see him, ticked off and kicking butt. And
yeah,
it's a good role. It's a good role for him to come back.
I agree. I think it's a very good role for him to reintroduce himself because what was the last one? Signs is the last movie he acted in, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's great in Signs.
Almost 8 years absent in front of the camera. And it's Martin Campbell, who's a very good director. I know there were comparisons to the British miniseries it's based on. That was far superior, which maybe it is. But for what it is, for a weekend movie.
Didn't Martin Campbell work on the series, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're absolutely right. I thought it was it's entertaining. What more could you ask for? What more could you really ask for?
And there's not a Jew in sight, which is good for Mel.
Yeah, it's a double feature of this. It's double feature of this and Schindler's List.
Right. Men in Black 3D.
Scott Rowland read the script and loved it though.
Really?
That's what I heard. I mean,
he probably saw The Offer on the table and loved it.
I would have thought, if I saw it too, I would have said this is the greatest thing I've ever
seen. The money they were offering him was probably in 3D. That's what he liked about it. Rick, do you have a fondness in your heart for the Men in Black series, and would you be anxious to see a third one?
I like the first one, the second one not so much. I guess I'd go see it, but no, I mean, I wouldn't be overly excited about it.
Right. Do you think people are? Do you think, because reading the press release announcing the third movie, they say, it's a wonderful treat for us to bring back our beloved franchise that people all over the world are in love with. And honest to God, I don't remember the first thing about the second Men in Black.
I can't remember anything about it. And Johnny Knoxville were in it, but I can't say, it's like what I've said this many times before, I can't say when I exited a theater, I can't wait for the third one.
I mean, that never really slipped my mind.
They looked like because if I remember that movie, it was very brief. It wasn't a very long movie. It's they didn't have a lot to, it almost felt like they were filling the screen as it was, filling the time in, that they really didn't have a lot to do in that one. So the third one, of course, make it in 3D.
Well, Tommy Lee Jones is in negotiations. Will Smith's already signed up. Josh Brolin, I guess, like you said, wants to do it. Barry Sonnenfeld is back, so it's the original creative team behind the first two. Barry Sonnenfeld could use a decent movie again.
What was his last movie that he made?
What was it? Big Trouble?
No, that was Barry Levinson. That was Barry Levinson.
I thought Sonnenfeld did a Tim Allen thing.
Let's go.
Investigate that, because I think I'm actually right about
that. I'm going to investigate that. Okay, while you guys talk about important things, investigate that.
But, Sonnenfeld, Wild Wild West, I think it was hard for him to get anything going after he made that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They're not making a sequel to that, are they?
No.
That's what I'm aware of.
That's a pretty safe bet.
He was a producer on Space Chimps.
how could I forget? I'm sorry.
I'm looking. He did do Big Trouble, but no, he did Men in Black 2. Oh, RV is what you're thinking of.
RV.
Oh, okay, RV.
Big Trouble has some good, there's some good actors, and there's some actually good, Big Trouble's all right. But RV, I didn't even see RV. I mean.
Last really good movie he made, maybe Get Shorty.
Yeah,
it's been a while, man. It's been a while.
Get Shorty would be I think the Get Shorty and the Addams Family's movies, but I like Big Trouble. I didn't mind. But RV that's hard to.
I think you should go back to DPing.
Yes, but it's look at wait. Were there, he has a lot of movies in development though.
Sure he does.
He does have a lot of... Wow, he's got tons of movies in development. Okay, let's not...
Yeah, and he's tried to get into TV. He did that Pushing
Daisies,
which was
popular. Pushing Daisies and Notes from the Underbelly, which I have no idea what that is.
Right. None of us are flipping our skirts over Men in Black 3D, and I don't think that the public in general will either. Maybe
but
if they come up
with... for something like that, I just don't know. You're taking a gamble there because once again, we're talking about 8 years since the second one, and the second one came and
that
went
nobody remembers. Yeah.
Yeah. These things. Not everything is a sure thing. For every Star Wars and Indiana Jones, where you have an audience, regardless of the quality, where you do have a built-in audience, and just other things, it's harder to gauge.
Yeah.
And I think Men in Black 2 Men in Black 3 is not a sure thing at all.
While we're talking about our next topic, Jerry, look up the MTV Movie Award nominations.
I was reading through these earlier. I'm going to go to Nikki Fink. Nikki Fink, we're using your site as the as our source.
What I love about that first Men in Black actually is it's not a great movie to me, but I love Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
Okay.
Every time he's like, sugar water.
Just I love in those movies. Who
sugar.
I love, besides, is Rip Torn. He's great in those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
All right. Okay, I'm going to read to you.
And then another favorite part is, I like the little throwaway where Vincent D'Onofrio walks up to somebody in the street of New York and says, "Where do you keep your dead?" And the lady's like, the morgue? It's like in New York, that's an average question. He's like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? Get away from me. It's New York or the morgue? You know, it's anyway. Okay, the nominations.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Here are the nominations for best movie, and I got depressed when I read this. Alice in Wonderland, Avatar, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, The Hangover, and wait for it, wait. The Twilight Saga, New Moon.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, okay. Best female performance.
Actually, in MTV land, that's a close race, those movies.
I can only really think of one movie I really want to win, really.
The Hangover, right?
The Hangover.
Right.
Then Harry Potter. And I like Avatar, but not enough. But why is Alice in Wonderland there?
Honest to goodness, I think that in with the MTV audience, it's going to be a tight race between Avatar and Twilight.
I think you're right. Okay, but let's go to the best female performance. Zoe Saldana for Avatar. Sandra Bullock.
This is best female performance?
Yeah, best female performance as opposed to best, never mind.
Male.
Sandra Bullock
for
The Blind Side. Kristen Stewart for The Twilight Saga. Now, here's something. Kristen Stewart, I would have given her for either Adventureland or The Runaways, but that's just me. Obviously, that doesn't count in MTV.
It's a little too sophisticated for me.
Emma Watson for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. She's a very good actress in those roles. And Amanda Seyfried, who's a very good actress, but for Dear John.
Dear Lord, that's what, dear God.
Wait till I get best male performance. Janum Tatum for Dear John, Daniel Radcliffe for Harry Potter, Robert Pattinson for The New Moon, not for Remember Me though. Taylor Lautner for New Moon. I think they might cancel each other out. And Zac Efron for 17 again. I would give it to Zac Efron right there, hands down. He's got my vote.
Do they place bets on the MTV Movie Awards?
do you want to start doing it?
Like they do the Oscars. I wonder if they handicap the race and everything.
Okay, here we get interesting. Best breakout star. This is where it gets really interesting. This is where you can bite your fingernails.
And breakout is in acne, or breakout is in just...
Okay, Zach Galifianakis for The Hangover.
No, best breakout star, brought to you by Clearasil.
Anna Kendrick for Up in the Air.
Okay.
Pine for Star Trek.
Wow, that came out of left field.
Chris Pine for Star Trek. I already mentioned Zach. Gabourey Sidibe for Precious. Logan Lerman for Percy Jackson, The Olympians. And Quentin Aaron for The Blind Side. Now, I got to say, these are all, you know, this may
That's
be
decent.
The most interesting category.
Yeah. What is – get to Best Kiss.
Okay.
I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, all right. Well, you're getting it now, aren't you? Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson for New Moon.
Oh, boy.
Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning for The Runaways. There is a Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. And that's it. I don't think there are any other – all right. Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds for The Proposal. Scarlett Johansson will get very upset about that. Taylor Swift and Taylor Lautner for Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see Valentine's Day. And Zoe Saldana and Sam Worthington for Avatar. The Runaways, hands down.
Wow. We're seeing that one is a CG character and the other is an invalid in Avatar. And their best kiss. You're still working... there's still two inanimate objects kissing in that movie and in Twilight, so I think they have that in common. God, I worked so hard for that joke, and it
Dude,
just floundered.
Dude, you did, and I'm oh my God. Oh, Jesus. All right. What do you want to know anymore, or?
No, I sure don't.
Okay, thank you. Well, what about the best what-the-fuck moment? Can we do that, please? Can we do that?
What?
Then we'll stop. We'll stop. Okay, Megan Fox, Jennifer's body, where she vomits.
Is that really a category?
Yes, where she vomits a mysterious black ooze. Ken Jeong from The Hangover, the naked trunk surprise. I could see that. Isabel Lucas for The Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, unexpected transformation.
Yeah.
Betty White, The Proposal. Cops a feel. Okay, I think she might get it because every the time. But
yeah, Betty White will get
one,
it.
The last one is really, I think, the all time greatest, and that's Bill Murray in Zombieland. Bill
oh,
Murray.
Oh God,
zombie?
That was hysterical.
Oh, that was good.
That you got.
I like Zombieland a lot.
Oh, I love Zombieland.
That was great.
Speaking of Betty White, Rick, would you have? They did a petition to have her host Saturday Night Live. And
right.
Apparently it was their highest rated in 18 months. And I watched most of it, and most of it was funny. So
yeah,
it was,
I know, it was.
It was unlike most. Yeah. Yeah, it was unlike most SNLs in that it was funny.
Yeah.
Would you, now they're starting a petition to have her host the Oscars.
Oh, wow.
Would you be opposed to Betty White hosting the Oscars?
I wish she'd host everything.
No, that'd be great. I thought she was a lot of fun. She had a lot of energy. If she did the Oscars, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you? What was your take on the Oscars? Because the Oscars, the co-hosting this year.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty funny. Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin. I thought they did a good job. I laughed a lot. I liked the John Hughes tribute. I thought that was touching.
Right.
That they did. But
you didn't think it was in bad taste to single out one person out of all that died?
Well, I would...
Well, when you put it that way, Jamie.
I would be biased because I think he was never recognized by the Academy anyway. So,
right.
I felt like it was appropriate for that. But he's ultimately, I think John Hughes is a big part of film history and a big part of a lot of people's lives. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't feel anything. I was okay with him singling him out. You know, I loved his work, and I was sad when he died.
We have more Polanski news, and the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because Maria Zinovich, the director of that documentary,
mm-hmm.
the first one, who's making the sequel to it,
right,
went to the press today and said, yes, I'm making a sequel to it. Polanski's going to be involved, and it's really an international intrigue kind of story this time around. So I just bring that up because the mainstream media is breaking the story, what, 7 months after we did. Thank you. Thank you.
We know we bring it up. I want to bring up something about the Polanski thing. I do want to.
Hang on, Jerry. Let me just bask in my glow for just
a few
more moments.
Yeah, please take your time.
All right, I'm done. Go ahead.
Okay. You go to the comments, whether it's on Deadline Hollywood or IMDb or anywhere, and comments message boards are full of nastiness. But the comments towards Polanski are just brutally harsh.
Right.
They think he just needs some people. I wouldn't want to say a majority, but a good deal think he should come back here and be locked up. They refer to him as a pedophile. Some places.
Well,
and a lot of anti-Semitic.
He's a pedophile.
He did. But I am of the school of thought what he did was wrong. I mean,
right.
What he did was
You're
wrong.
Of the school of thought that drugging and raping a 13-year-old is wrong.
Yeah, but then you get this whole other subset that is full of anti-Semitic. And then they like to draw comparisons to him and Woody Allen, too. I don't know. I think he's better.
Look, part of that, I don't think a lot of those people actually care. Part of it is just they want to spew venom.
Yeah, that is a lot of it. I think is what that is. But I just noticed that since it started, when we started the whole thing with Brett Ratner, and then the whole thing snowballed, and
I think as much as I love his films, I think he should come back. He should face the music. He's not going to get incarcerated. He's going to get a slap in the wrist. Put an end to this 40-year-old drama that's just been going on and on and on. I think what he's doing is cowardly.
No, you're right. It is cowardly. He should come back, and I think you're right. It will be a slap on the wrist or something. But I think just to end, he must want closure.
He must not.
I think so.
He must not, because he's not behaving as though he does.
Because this, I don't know. I mean, he's made, the last movie he made was one of the best he's made. I think deep down inside there must be some, just to get this over with. This can't be, this living abroad and...
Yeah, he thought he'd be getting it over with when he fled the country.
Yeah.
Look, I think his case was mishandled. I think he has a case to have this dropped, but he's got to face the fire.
Yeah.
He's got to show some backbone.
Right.
And I know he has to be scared. I mean, he's at the latter part of his life, and there's a chance of incarceration until the end of it. But, you know, you do the deed, you got to pay for it, whether it's 40 years later or not. Man, I feel like Pat Robertson or something.
Great. Jamie just compared himself to Pat Robertson.
I didn't mean to do that. Speaking of a disgusting human being. All right. Hey, I asked, and Rick, you actually responded to this. I asked a question a couple weeks ago that we haven't gotten around to. Rate your top three favorite Michael Mann films.
Yeah.
And right down the line, it was pretty much consistent. Heat and The Insider are considered his two big masterpieces. I won't go through all of them. But then Mohicans came up. And then, Rick, you said Collateral is your
Collateral.
Number one.
You got to put up.
I like Collateral. I
love
it a lot. Yeah.
The other one I love is Thief. I love Thief a lot.
So, and then you put Last of the Mohicans followed by Heat. You and I actually saw Heat together.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we usually just make it.
We saw Men in Black together, too, didn't we?
yeah. So Collateral, I always like Collateral, but does Collateral seem like a minor note compared to something like Heat and The Insider?
No.
Obviously not to you.
No, not at all.
Okay. It's a question. I don't necessarily feel that way. But,
right.
But Heat and The Insider seem... And The Insider's odd because The Insider is made more epic than that story really you would think that story would deserve.
Right.
I mean, it's an exhaustive movie, and yet it's so completely watchable for me. And of course it's, oh man, Roland, of course it's, I mean, the acting is incredible.
Is he on the line?
Roland just wrote me and said, when do I call in? So Roland, we will close the segment with your phone call if you call in now. I just told him to call in.
Oh my God.
A regular listener, Roland, has to rant about something, and he wanted
probably
a
about
good time.
Me. I mean, it's probably just something really nasty about me. But
so, have you your birthday's coming up, Rick, on the 22nd, right?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Rick.
It hurts.
What was that quivering voice filled with fear or something?
Yeah, really, man. What's going on? Is there something you don't know about? Is there something going on in that state that I don't know about? Do you guys get beat up on your birthday? I mean, what the hell is going on down there?
No.
No, we're just, you know, after a certain age, you're just like, oh, no, you wince, you know?
Yeah, no, I try to avoid it at all costs.
So what's the big movie that weekend?
What opens it? You know what? MacGruber.
Yeah, MacGruber. Is a MacGruber. MacGruber
or Shrek 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your big birthday movies used to be, you know, Jurassic Park.
I know.
This year you get MacGruber. That's good.
I get MacGruber. Yes,
MacGruber's better than some other things I could think of.
That's true. I'm looking forward to MacGruber.
Okay. Let's
say
take
Betty White's not going to be in MacGruber.
No, but she did those skits.
No, it's great.
Okay, Roland, we're going to take your call. Let's put on Roland. Roland, you're on the line.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Roland, say hello to Rick. He's a new movie geek.
Hey, Rick, new movie geek.
Hi, Roland. Nice to meet you.
Let's break the ice. What is it?
All right, Roland, you said that you had to rant about something tonight, so I'm giving you the floor for a little bit. Go ahead.
Okay, before I get onto my rant, because Michael Mann's my favorite filmmaker, I think it's Heat. For me, it's Heat and The Insider and Manhunter kind of tied. Second.
Oh, Manhunter's another one that's really good, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. Okay, go ahead, Roland.
Oh, let's go for it.
Yeah. Iron Man 2, what a load of bollocks.
I knew you would hate it. I just knew it. What didn't you like about it? Did Robert Downey come over your house and clog up your toilet or something? I mean, what?
Everything. Fucking, if you don't like Robert Downey Jr., this is the film to watch. I just can't stand the franchise, can't stand the idea. I mean, it's just a lot of shit. Everything about it is crap.
Who's shitting your cereal this morning, man?
What don't you like about the concept?
It's pathetic. The whole thing is just a joke. It really is. It's like he's supposed to be some kind of superhero. He's got a big hole in his chest. He's always like a few moments away from dying from some kind of iron poisoning or whatever the fuck it is.
Well, that's like a metaphor for alcoholism, you schmuck. I mean, come on. Jesus Christ, Roland. Come on, man. Someone who has a fucking, a cockney son of a bitch like yourself should know this man has suffered. Come on.
Gosh. Roland, you bring out the vigor in Jerry.
Huh?
Okay, so you don't like the franchise. You don't like the concept. But you're predisposed to not like Robert Downey Jr. to begin with. Right?
The only slightly decent thing in the whole film is Don Cheadle, because he's a great actor. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow, what a joke. I mean, it's all of it is just rubbish. Can't stand it.
Okay.
God, this is so utterly predictable.
But hey, Roland, will you be going to see Letters to Juliet this weekend? One of Roland's favorite movies, Rick, from this year is like Leap Year, and you're looking forward to Dear John.
No, I didn't say Leap Year was one of my favorite movies. I did not even come close to saying that.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed your taste in movies tends to veer more towards, how do I say it? Having a vagina lately.
And not
so,
great vagina films. There are great vagina films out there. These aren't even good ones.
Yeah.
Now, come on, guys. If you compare Kick-Ass, okay, a few weeks ago to Iron Man 2, and compare them, I mean, there's no comparison.
They're two totally different.
Yeah, two totally different movies.
Two totally different movies, baby. two totally different things. I went and looked through the graphic novel.
If you compare Remains of the Day to
Howard Dan, I mean,
to
still
the Human Centipede.
Are you telling me that those two films are in completely different genres?
I think more Iron Man. I think of really Tony Stark is just such a different. It's Kick-Ass is more like, how shall I say it? A very tongue-in-cheek, very violent tongue-in-cheek, almost satire of the comic book genre.
Yeah,
Iron Man 2 is a straightforward adventure film, really. Kick-Ass has a lot going on in it that's more interested in, what is it? What is the word I'm looking for?
They're both got superhero themes. They're both tentpole franchises.
Well, kind of both tentpole.
I don't know. I mean, the Kick-Ass... Kick-Ass relied a lot on fanboy word of mouth. It's not, it doesn't have the Marvel.
I gotta say something. Actually, there is a big difference there. I mean, Kick-Ass is a very, how shall I say it, insider movie. It's not. Where the one thing I gotta hand to Jon Favreau on the Iron Man movies is he made them user friendly. Just as J.J. Abrams made the Star Trek reboot user friendly, that people who aren't necessarily into the property could get into. Kick-Ass is really for fans of the comic book.
I would say Iron Man 2 is nearly as shit as Transformers 2.
Oh, God, come on.
What a bold statement.
No. I think to compare Jon Favreau to Michael Bay is just so unfair.
Don't say compare Jon Favreau, because...
Yeah, Jon Favreau's never slept with a supermodel.
Yeah.
It comes up a Jon Favreau picture as if he's got this whole body of work. You know?
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. But there is a tone. Favreau tone that came through in that first movie, I know.
In the first movie that came through in Maid, that came through in Elf, that came through in Zathura, and it comes out in this one. Look, I watched, like I said a couple weeks ago, I watched the making of featurettes on the Blu-ray.
Rick and I are just going to sit back and
watch it. He's really involved in every step of the film. He's very, you know, I have to say, as a filmmaker, I'm kind of impressed how involved he is with every step of the process. Whether you like it or not, forget that, Roland. Take your daggers out and forget that. If I had written a script, I would want him to make it, because he obviously really cares about everything he works on.
Right.
I think that.
And I know you don't like the property, you don't like the franchise, you don't like the actors, except for Doug.
There is a theory in the chat room, Roland, that you don't like Iron Man 2 because it's entertaining.
compare the first Spider-Man film. I mean, compare that to Iron Man 2.
Okay.
Not the first one.
Or compare, a really... one of the best, probably the best superhero film made, The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't compare. One's shit, one's good.
I don't think anyone would put The Dark Knight in, because everyone's elevated The Dark Knight to really a gangster epic, a criminal epic. People don't really consider The Dark Knight really a comic book film, per se.
It transcends it. We're not used
really
to comic book films that good.
I would say the comic book film you want to compare it to
Spider-Man
2, and that's just, none of them are going to come close to that.
If you compare all the comic book films that are made out there, this is
right. If you compare every movie ever made.
It's very entertaining, Roland. Roland, have a couple of drinks before you go see it.
Do you have something against, this is an honest question, do you consider yourself kind of above mainstream Hollywood popular entertainment?
Well, I just said The Dark Knight was probably, I think for me, the best film for last year.
Okay.
So
no one's going to dispute that. I just think, Iron Man is, I find, very entertaining. I was really, and it's the last movie in the world I would expect to have been as... the first one especially, as good as it was. I mean, it really came out of nowhere. You took a second-tier character, and you made a really stellar, exciting, and entertaining movie from it.
So, Rick, would you put The Dark Knight as the poster boy for great comic book-based movies?
I probably so. I really liked The Dark Knight. I mean,
yeah.
I thought had so much. I mean, obviously it's an entertaining movie, but just beyond that, there's so much symbolism and stuff, you know.
So would you put it now in terms of comic book, which it's so much more than a comic book movie, but in terms of comic book, would you put it above Superman?
You mean the first Superman? Wow.
Sure. Because I know you have an affinity for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I love Richard Donner and
the first two.
Wow. I guess The Dark Knight is. I mean, I don't think it's a perfect film, but it's up there with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Begins. You know.
Yeah, I like Batman Begins.
Yeah,
too.
I mean everyone seems to have forgotten about Batman Begins.
I know that people like to beat on that one. They're like, oh, that one wasn't very good, but man, I thought Batman Begins was really good.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I love Christopher Nolan's work.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever seen a bad Christopher Nolan film.
Uh-uh, not at all.
Christopher Nolan's a real filmmaker, and Jon Favreau isn't.
Did Jon Favreau, like, turn it down? I'm just curious, Roland. Your bitterness is just classic. I just love it.
No one's calling the franchise out. No one's calling him out. Robert Downey Jr. is... got to be one of the most least watchable mainstream A-lister actors out there. There's nothing going on with this guy.
There's nothing going on with Robert Downey Jr.
There's nothing going on. You don't give a shit what you're thinking. He's just a superficial, technically talented actor that I find very unwatchable.
Technically talented. That's valid.
There's a million actors that are technically talented. It doesn't mean to say they should be carrying a film.
Well, Roland, I think you should be acting and directing more.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to fuck. I mean, you're like fucking Richard Burton, man, at the end there, and Oliver Reed too. Shit. I mean.
I think you need to make the third Iron Man, Roland.
I think you need to take over. I think you need to say, look, I can do this better than you guys, and do it.
If someone came to me with an Iron Man script, I'd say, what a load of shit.
Look, everyone has an opinion about movies. I haven't seen it. Your opinion might be completely valid. I happen to have enjoyed Iron Man. I like the first movie. I like the irreverence of it. I like the tone and the attitude, which is all that movie's about. It's not about... It's not about nourishment necessarily. It's about entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, so is Transformers 2.
Yes. I didn't like Transformers 2 because I didn't understand it.
I didn't really think Sarah could take or leave Transformers.
There's nothing to understand. It's entertainment. It's big robots beating each other up. Same kind of shit, right?
No, but they're explaining something for a good hour of that movie, and I have no idea what it is they're talking about.
Well, if you made Iron Man 2 another...
I love getting Roland riled up.
Yeah, I just love it, dude. Dude, Roland, you need to get your own show, man. I'm seriously, Comedy Central needs to give you a fucking show.
Okay, Iron Man 2 you don't like. Is there anything out there right now that you do like, Roland?
Well, I said I like Kick-Ass. I thought that was great.
Okay.
No, nothing else.
Okay.
Well, he likes Kick-Ass. He likes The Dark Knight. He likes some good movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got good taste in what he does like.
He's got good taste. It's his taste, regardless of what he thinks about. I mean, it's his opinion. I mean, of course it's valid. I mean, I disagree with him on the Iron Man, but it's his opinion. It's a valid opinion.
Jerry, I mean, it's just like your opinion, man.
Customer. He's a tough customer.
Jerry, I can't understand how you can agree that...
Jimmy's quoting The Big Lebowski.
This I've got to hear. This I've got to hear. What can't you understand, Roland?
I think you agreed that last year you that Red Riding trilogy was the best movie that you saw.
It's one of I really liked it a lot.
And then you like Iron Man 2.
Yeah. What don't you understand?
It doesn't add up. The taste thing doesn't add up.
So you're using your perception though. Your perception. To gauge other people's taste, and if they don't line up to your expectations or your calculation of your perception, you're like, it doesn't make sense. Roland, can I give you some advice? Who the fuck cares? Who the fuck really cares Because I like Red Riding, and so I can't like Iron Man 2. I find Iron Man 2 to be, like, wonderful escapist entertainment. I find Red Riding Trilogy to be wonderfully perplexing and engrossing and very well made. And, you know, it's something you think about. But can't we have fun, too? Can't we be entertained? You know, it's like can't we just enjoy ourselves sometimes? Isn't that all right? Kick-Ass comes in with such a built-in fanboy expectation. While I like it, I got to tell you, I wasn't blown away. I wanted to know what all you were smoking, because, I mean, it's a very enjoyable movie, but it ain't The Second Coming.
It's a masterpiece compared to Iron Man 2.
I think you probably think Gop is a fucking masterpiece compared to Iron Man 2.
Wow. Gothica? Did you say Gothica?
No, I said Gotha. The Tribe of Terror.
Oh, okay. Alright.
What the fuck about Danny Jr. in Gothica as well?
I wasn't talking about that. But whatever.
It all comes full circle, Roland.
Yeah, it does.
All right.
I didn't even mention. But really,
Roland, do you like Dustin Hoffman, Roland?
I love Dustin Hoffman. I really like
Oh, my gosh, something that you like. All right.
Oh, my God.
Do you want to stick around a little bit when we talk Dustin Hoffman, Roland, with us?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, as long as we can tolerate you, we'll keep you on.
Yeah, we'll keep you on.
Rick, buddy, I know that you're... I'm sorry. You had to endure this back and forth.
What the hell's wrong with that? That's what people listen for.
I know. But thank you for joining us tonight. You're going to be back on again sometime this month, whenever we can arrange it.
Yeah.
Thanks for inviting me again, guys.
Hey, man. Thank you, Rick.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good night.
Good night.
Night.
All right, Roland. Are we done with the
Are we done with the anti Robert Downey Jr. club?
Did Rick think Iron Man 2 was shit as well or not?
Okay. All right, Dustin Hoffman. When we talk Dustin Hoffman, what are the first credits that come to your mind, Roland?
Marathon Man.
Marathon Man.
That definitely.
And probably Rain Man, but probably because of the age I was at when I saw it.
Right. So any movie with the word man in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Dustin Hoffman, you know, what interests me, Jerry and Roland, about Dustin Hoffman is when we go through the list of great actors from the 70s that came from that period,
mm-hmm.
we always talk about, you know, we'll talk about De Niro and Pacino and Nicholson will be in there. Hoffman sometimes is a little under the radar for some reason. I find when I talk to people about great actors from that genre, and then you start to mention movies, and they're like, oh, well, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Hoffman's one of them. And one of the absolute most versatile of all of them, too.
That's
from
true.
The beginning. You're a huge fan. We had a disagreement about The Graduate, I remember, not too long ago. I mean, probably last year or something. Because that was obviously his breakout role.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought The Graduate is overrated.
There are a lot of people who feel not a lot, but there are people who do feel that way. I mean,
But you do not.
No, I don't think. But it's not my favorite role of his. But I think what's impressive about that is he's nearly 30 years old, and he's playing obviously a much younger character in the film. And I found that always to be impressive. But I do think it is one of those landmark films, but. Now, is it one of my favorites? No, I'd have to go with Straw Dogs.
Which was about four years later, a collaboration with Peckinpah. And I think when you look at his early stuff, and of course it has to do with the period of time that he made movies too, the daring kind of movies that were being made, you look at A Midnight Cowboy.
That's about it.
You look at A Graduate, which was intended for a Robert Redford type, so that speaks largely to Mike Nichols' bravery in casting Hoffman for that as well.
Right.
You look at a Little Big Man, which is a movie he did right after Midnight Cowboy,
mm-hmm.
which is an astounding, like, wide-spanning versatile role because he's playing very young and very old.
Right.
And his collaboration with Peckinpah in a very, very challenging movie, Straw Dogs, which I have found over the years has grown in reverence. There's like this resurrection of Straw Dogs that has happened in the past 10 years. Have you found
that? It has, yeah. I mean, even Criterion released a edition of it not long ago. And it's you know, that, I mean, as a graduate, obviously, one of your favorites is Kramer versus Kramer. One he did with McQueen, Papillon, is very good. Tootsie is actually one that I love a lot, and that's from the 80s, and I like that one.
He was, some of the great classic movies, All the President's Men, of course.
That's another one. He's like, boom, the two of them working together was just magic.
Him there with Redford, who they wanted for The Graduate, you know, and what makes All the President's Men special is their rapport and their chemistry, but there's something very technical behind that, because they had an idea early on that this should be like a working couple, like a married couple. They should be able to finish each other's sentences. So not only did they learn their dialogue, they learned the other's dialogue, and they made it some kind of almost a skit in a way to finish the other sentence. Leading up to their own line.
Right.
And so there's this special kind of give and take between the two of them in that movie, which is absolutely part of what's essential in making that relationship work in that film.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Lenny was a movie that very mixed, as most Fosse movies were critically.
Right.
I don't know how successful Lenny was. It's not a movie that I'm necessarily crazy about or invested in that deeply.
No, but it's like, you know, for a lot of us, it was, the only exposure we had to Lenny Bruce before actually going out and then discovering his, you can watch him on YouTube, you can watch him and, read his stuff, and he just is such, but he was, I mean, for the longest time, he couldn't separate the two because of the movie. I thought he did a really good job in that. The other movie I like comes later on, and it is not a well-regarded movie at all, and that's Hero. The Stephen Frears movie. I think he's wonderful in that. I really do.
Well, and the worry there was it took him a long time to figure out how to play that role and not make it too Ratso-Ritso-ish.
Right, and it is. It is. You could definitely, there's a lot of links to that classic character.
Yeah. Kramer versus Kramer is great,
and
I think it's one of his highlights. Just because there's no eccentricity, there's nothing that he's really depending upon, to no affectations or anything. It's just, it's very honest about a father trying to do the best he can, and it's emotional. And when I think of Dustin Hoffman now, and anyone that's seen him in award ceremonies or interviews, he gets very emotional very easily. He's just a wonderfully emotional guy. And I see that starting there with Kramer versus Kramer.
Right.
It was great in that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And Straight Time. Roland, have you seen Straight Time?
Who made that?
Ulla Grosbart.
Yeah. Okay. No, I haven't seen that.
That's one of the unsung movies in his resume. And as I mentioned before, it's his favorite performance of his own. I remember him saying that years ago. Straight Time, it's one of those 70s movies like Hardcore is for me, Straight Time is for other people. Like, this is a quintessential movie from the period. Emmett Walsh plays like the parole officer. And he's wonderfully gruff and offensive. And it's a really good film and a strong performance from him. So. That's out on DVD, Jerry?
Yeah, it's out on DVD, yeah.
And then stuff like Tootsie, which is obviously very personal to him.
It's Tootsie, I never got that movie. It didn't appeal to me.
Really?
Yeah. I just didn't think it was funny, and I just didn't get, it just wasn't into it, you know. I thought it was very lightweight.
Right.
No, I can
well,
see that.
I think it is. I think it's designed to feel like that, and yet within it are some pretty weighty issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dealing with ego first of all, and then dealing with gender issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of fools you in a way. But what interests me a lot about it is how Hoffman is parroting the perception of him as this really egotistical perfectionist, mm-hmm. this difficult person, and his bravery to kind of step out and confront that,
mm-hmm.
As well as to look pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great Bill Murray performance too in that movie.
Yeah. And I do think he's hysterical in it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got stuff. Joel likes Tootsie. He's a big fan of Tootsie. He's never seen Kramer versus Kramer. Joel, get on that, man.
Yeah, man, get on it. It's worthwhile. It's definitely worthwhile checking out.
He's done some crap, though, hasn't he? Like, what was that movie he did with Matthew Broderick when he's supposed to be the tough
Family Business?
Family Business, yeah. I don't remember much about it. I remember watching it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, he can't play tough.
Well, no. There's a place where he can play tough. I mean, he something like Straw Dogs.
Mm-hmm. But he has to change. Yes, that.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what so many people had a problem with at the time. I mean, you know.
Well, it works against type. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's unexpected that he has to assume that role. I mean, it's unexpected for him too. That's what makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
he is not that man.
Yeah,
and he has
right.
to kind of dig into his base instincts to become that man.
And that's kind of like, you know, the movie, I guess a movie like that that was definitely influenced by that was the one that I'm in that with Al Hopkins. The Edge is kind of like that in some ways.
Right.
Which was originally called Bookworm, I think.
Right. Which isn't a great title for action.
No, it's not a great. No, it's not. But there are some things, though, that he's later on. I mean, there are some things that I was actually thinking about this. What are the things he's done recently? And there are some movies that I do like. We talked about The Runaway Jury when we were talking about The Hackman. I like that. I do like I Heart Huckabees. I know a lot of people aren't crazy about that movie. On the other one, Stranger Than Fiction, I thought he was, you know, he added some to that. Now, I've never seen Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, but I've heard a lot of bad things about it.
Right. I've seen it. Is it as bad
as everyone says? I mean,
it's not a great film. He's colorful in it. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he finds a note and he plays it, and he's enjoyable in it.
But I guess obviously the standout recently in the last would be Wag the Dog.
Right. Right.
Where he's doing Robert Evans and.
Well, and he plays kind of tough in Confidence, right?
No, Confidence. I like that. Like that was Confidence. Yeah, with the one with Ed Burns. And Andy
right.
Garcia, right.
How about
Outbreak? I think is a solid. It's an Edge of Darkness kind of movie. It's one of those solid, sturdy movies.
Outbreak was the one that was supposed to. I remember because actually a friend of ours, John Landau, was out here when they were going to make the Crisis in the Hot Zone movie. That was the rival, and that was filming up in Frederick, Maryland. And that never took off. And that was the one everyone thought would be the big hit based on the Robert Preston?
Scary book. Scary
book. Yeah, the Hot Zone. And I remember, but Outbreak beat it. And, you know, it is like, Jamie's absolutely right. It's a very entertaining film. What about Moonlight Mile?
Yeah, a very personal movie for Brad mm-hmm. Silberling.
I like
you know,
that a lot.
A good dramatic film.
Yeah.
The one that I'm sorry, Roland, go ahead.
Didn't Hoffman do American Buffalo on film?
Yeah,
yes.
He did. Mm-hmm.
Because Pacino backed out of it, yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen the film either. I mean, I know the play.
This Dennis Franz one. The one with Dennis Franz and the boy, I think Sean Nilsson from the movie Fresh.
Yes, yes.
No, it's good. It's definitely worthwhile checking out.
Yeah, I mean the play's great. I saw...
Yeah.
I saw William H. Macy do that on stage. He was great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about, and Dean, I think I see that you're on the line. I'll pick it up in a second. There's something about Pacino, too, in that they followed each other throughout their careers. Yeah. They were compared a lot by critics for having similar qualities, similar voices, and the nasally high-pitched voices and everything. And one turned a movie down, the other would take it. Buffalo's one, Kramer versus Kramer is one.
That's what David Thompson in his biographical dictionary film in the chat on his part on Dustin Hoffman. He brings that up, the whole thing with Pacino, everything that you just talked about. He goes into detail about that.
The one that I just want to mention as an unsung movie for me.
Okay,
this might be controversial, and then I'll pick up Dean's call. Is Sphere. Sphere,
mm-hmm.
for me, is I've always loved Sphere.
Okay.
And for me, it's this tremendous puzzle of a movie that builds and builds and builds and builds and builds.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the ending doesn't work because
right. That's yeah.
But thinking about it, no ending could work because
yeah, I think they dug themselves in.
Yeah, they built it so intensely, but I see a lot of The Shining in Sphere. Like when he's opening the,
mm-hmm.
the cabinets and you hear the plucking strings and it's all the same book or something in the cabinets.
Yeah. It's to be fair to the movie. I mean, I remember reading the book a long time ago, and it wasn't like Michael Crichton's like hit or miss, and it wasn't the world's greatest book. So it's like with the source material, you only have so much that you can work with. You can do if the source material is not great, And it's like what you said, the ending. No ending is going to really satisfy.
Right.
That's a good choice. I remember that was supposed to come out the summer, and then they pushed it back to the winter. Yeah.
And another impressive kind of versatile effort from Barry Levinson. I mean, something completely different from anything that he'd done before. I've always championed Sphere. Let's take Dean's call.
Okay. I was just going to ask about Billy Bathgate, what everyone thought of that.
The Robert Benton movie, that's a tough character.
Yeah.
Schultz, right?
That was really
tepidly received.
Yeah.
Is it up for a reassessment? I haven't checked it out.
The reason I say that is because it was his... A lot of people played Dutch Schultz, and a lot of people thought he was it was miscast. And it's interesting to note that where he then years later played Meyer Lansky in the Andy Garcia movie The Lost City, and I thought he was very good as Meyer Lansky. Actually,
I thought Billy Bathgate had the poor fortune of coming out on the heels of Bugsy, which was
came out right around that, a month or two before Bugsy,
which was a superior gangster movie.
Oh much. Superior.
All right. Dean, I think this is Dean 678.
That's it.
All right. What do you got to tell us about Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah, what do you got?
Dustin Hoffman. Well, first of all, my favorite of his performances just right off the bat is Tootsie. I think that's his most layered performance. I think it was a very difficult film to pull off in general. Particularly with all the behind the scenes goings on, where they weren't sure if they had a script and
mm-hmm.
Where they were going with it or anything, And the fact that it came out as great as it did, largely because of his performance, is enough for me to crown that his best performance. With Straight Time close by, he can
mm-hmm.
play tough, and. I think another thing is that you were talking earlier on in the show about how a lot of people don't bring his name up enough, when they're talking about Pacino and De Niro and all that. They forget about Hoffman. It's because Hoffman doesn't play tough a lot of the time, and so there's always a layer of vulnerability. Even in something like Straight Time, there's that first half of Straight Time where he really is trying to go straight,
mm-hmm.
and then he just gives up and says, "I got to be what I am,"
Classic Edward Bunker story,
But there's always that sense that there's something mushy underneath, Kramer versus Kramer is another example. He's just a hard-driven ad exec, and then the movie turns on the fact that he finds something deeper within himself, to deal with the situation that he's in. But Have you guys brought up Lenny yet?
Yeah, we talked about Lenny.
A little bit about it, yeah.
Yeah, I think Lenny is one of his great movies. Now here's some movies that you probably haven't talked about yet. And I missed a couple of minutes. I'm down here on the street in Brooklyn, so I can get a good reception here.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
But, I thought it was worth it. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Who is Harry Kellerman and Why is He Saying All These Terrible Things About Me?
I've always wanted to. I've never had the time. You know, I've never gotten a chance. But it's one of those films that you every couple of years you hear mentioned. You hear people talk about it still.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's he's a musician, famous musician who has somebody out there who has a beef with him and. It's got really great songs by Shel Silverstein in it. And to me, when I watch it, I only watched it one time about six or seven years ago, and it was when it was released on VHS.
Wow, okay.
And I don't know if it's made it on the DVD yet. I don't think it has. But I was really struck by how much I was, like, looking at it. I was going, man, I bet the Coen brothers were really influenced by this movie. It's got some... It's got a few similarities to Big Lebowski in it, in some really strange ways.
Right.
So I highly recommend that movie. Also, Death of a Salesman, his take on Death of a Salesman.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to mention Death of a Salesman, an epic emotional performance as Willie Loman. I mean, really, like a defining Willie Loman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have to agree with that, yeah.
I mean, especially considering that Willie Loman was always considered a huge character as he's always played by somebody like Brian Dennehy or B.J. Cobb or somebody like that, you know?
Yeah,
And then he gets in it. He's already mousy to begin with.
Yes,
so
you can't really
see how he's this great salesman, but yet Hoffman makes it work, you know?
And I tell you what, rewatching Death of a Salesman, watching he and Malkovich go at it, Malkovich, who is not generally an emotional actor, and he's very emotional with Hoffman in the scenes where they're going back and forth, and he's saying, "Let me go, Pop. I'm just an ordinary guy. I'm not, you know, legendary." And it's great back and forth between two great actors. That's really powerful stuff.
It is, and you feel like the walls are closing in on you in that movie, you know? It was actually, you know, of course, done for television, and it was perfect for television.
It was.
But it actually transcends television to become like, you know.
It does.
One of his most recent movies that I thought got a bad rap, although I think it has a smallish kind of cult, is Hero.
I love that film. That's a great film. We talked about it, yeah.
Who directed that?
Stephen Frears, yeah.
I think that's an underrated movie, man. I really
very
do.
Very underrated. It was, you know, let's say it was dead on arrival when it came out. I mean, but it's great. I thought it was a really wicked satire.
Yeah, it was. And the cast is terrific. I mean, it's really an ensemble cast in that movie.
Andy Garcia, Gina Davis. Mm-hmm.
Chevy Chase, was he in that? Chevy Chase?
Yeah. You know, I've talked about this before, about the different phase that Hoffman seems to be entering, where he's accepting more and more supporting roles, and you get the sense that they're not meaty like he used to have back in his heyday, but they're a chance for him to work and to get comfortable and to practice his craft. And there's a joy in watching that in something like A Last Chance Harvey or
where it's
just joyful watching him now for me. I mean, it's always been, but he doesn't have to play the tortured character necessarily. He's a very comfortable presence on screen.
I love the fact that he's, unlike a lot of actors, Pacino, let's take Pacino for example. Pacino does do some supporting roles here and there, but it seems like Hoffman has really just, unless something out of the stratosphere comes along, it really seems like he's gotten comfortable and has actually been looking forward to this phase of his career where he could play character roles and not have to worry about carrying a whole movie. So therefore he could be in something like, you know, Finding Neverland or
Mm-hmm.
You know, or he's doing a lot of animation, like a lot of voice work too. I noticed.
No,
Panda.
Yeah, and he's doing another Kung Fu Panda now. What's interesting about him now is that he's actually, we mentioned this a couple weeks ago, just signed up for a TV show to star in the new David Milch HBO series.
Oh, really?
Oh,
that
would be interesting.
I'm looking it up right now. It's a series called Luck. As soon as it comes up, I'll tell you about it. But that's something interesting. That'll be something to to salivate over.
Well, I always wonder if it's easier, like, you know, when actors and actresses get older. I think in the movie climate these days, I think they get a tendency to get passed over for anything but really tiny roles. And so then they start looking to TV, and I think they find a home for themselves on TV a lot of the time.
Well, this is a David Milch series.
Mm-hmm.
At least the pilot is directed by Michael Mann.
Right.
It's called Luck. It's a TV series centered around characters at a horse racing track. It's Dustin Hoffman starring with Nick Nolte and Dennis Farina.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's interesting.
Kevin Dunn is in it. They got a lot of Ian Hart, Jason Gedrick. I mean, yeah.
That's a good cast.
Yeah. Richard Kine.
And I've always found Hoffman, like, extremely funny. Like, say what you will about Meet the Fockers. And Roland, I'm sure that you will. But he is hysterical, I think.
I think he's funny just in real life, you know. If you see him talking in interviews or hear the commentaries, I think he's just naturally funny.
Yeah.
And so he probably relishes the opportunity to get that out on screen, which is probably why I think Tootsie still his best performance.
It's a good one. Now we haven't talked about one movie.
We haven't talked about the elephant in the room, really.
Yeah, Ishtar.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
I think that's underrated. I think the first 45 minutes of it, I think it's a classic case of a comedy that gets bogged down by its plot.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much.
So prior to the Morocco stuff, you're with it.
Yeah.
I'm with it. Until they have to go overseas, and then it loses me because it loses its, you know, its own.
Yeah,
this
I remember when we watched it came on video and thinking, you know, this isn't as bad as everyone made it out to be. You know, I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't this atrocious film. You know,
there's a lot of stuff about Ishtar in that Warren Beatty biography.
Oh yeah,
Beatty didn't want to do, or Hoffman didn't want to do Ishtar. But he just eventually gave up, and when he agreed to do it, he said, look, I've had so many hits in a row, I'm due for a flop. So that's the attitude he went in when he did Ishtar. it's interesting. I'd be interested in watching it again. I remember watching it opening weekend, that movie was dead on arrival. That movie had such awful word of mouth before it came out.
It really did. I mean, and I wouldn't mind actually, you know, right in this day and age, watching it and seeing what it's like to watch it now without.
But hey, he had come off Kramer versus Kramer, Tootsie, Death of a Salesman, and then he did Ishtar.
Mm-hmm.
But then he rebounded, and this is the elephant in the room. He rebounded the next year with Rain Man,
right?
Which obviously, I think lots of people in this generation, if they think Dustin Hoffman or our generation. That maybe aren't so articulate in 70s cinema. We'll think Rain Man when you say Dustin Hoffman.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course.
I remember Pauline Kael's review of Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, and I've always been conflicted about it. She said Dustin Hoffman finds one note on the piano in Rain Man and plays it for 2 hours.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're playing an autistic guy, you know, what are you going to do?
That is the limitation of the character, though. I mean,
but let me ask you this, Jamie. Are you conflicted because Pauline Kael is someone that we all respect and you especially respect, that you disagree with her on this?
I'm conflicted in that it is true. But mm-hmm. that is the nature of the character.
Yeah, it is.
So, but can you classify that a great performance when the role itself doesn't offer color or variety?
Well, this is where you get into the old thing of the Academy loves if you play someone who has a handicap or something, you're guaranteed an Oscar nomination kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
I mean, is it a performance or is it a parlor trick? That's basically
the thing. I think it's a very good Tropic Thunder dealt with this perfectly with Sean Penn's going full retard.
You know, and I thought the Oscar that year should have gone to Hackman in Mississippi Burning.
That's it. Wow, that's interesting. Wow, tying it all together.
Yeah.
I agree, Jamie.
Thank you, Roland. And Roland, I mean, whatever we think of Tom Cruise, I think that Tom Cruise had the depth role in the movie.
Yeah,
he was the one that underwent the change.
Absolutely. He has to change. It's like in Philadelphia, Denzel Washington he's the one who changes in the movie. He is the one that, has the major transformation. But it is, if you're sick or dying or have something wrong with you, you're going to win the Oscar. Right about Tom Cruise. So it is, Tom Cruise is very good in Rain Man, something that is not mentioned a lot of times, but he really has the really multi-dimensional character in that.
Right.
And I think that's also true in Philadelphia, just to bring up another performance that is overshadowed by, I'm not saying that these performances,
yeah, you're right.
Oscar performances are bad, I'm just saying their performances are just as worthy.
And I think you noticed that. Like, when you watched Rain Man again,
mm-hmm.
you started noticing Tom Cruise.
Right.
And it was just like Philadelphia, you might start to notice Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Roland, what do you like about the Marathon Man? Why does that stick out for you?
Because he hates going to the dentist.
I think it was one of when you're a teenager and you're discovering things. I think it was when you're going back and watching stuff that was made before your time. It's one of the first movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
So it really stayed with me, and it's difficult to see Laurence Olivier do something modern
evil. He's so evil.
Yeah,
in it.
I mean, Laurence Olivier was great in it, and the only other things I've seen him do is old extracts of him being on stage when he was it was a different time of acting.
That's the first Dustin Hoffman movie I remember watching. It was in the 70s, like late 70s on TV one night, and I just found it so engrossing. You have this, the way the film opens up, and just Hoffman's character, Roy Scheider, and Laurence Olivier. I mean, it's really truly one of the best of those films that dealt with, there's a whole subgenre of like Nazis, in America, or the Nazis after the war, and that's definitely one of the best.
It's one of the best of one of the best genres of the 70s, which is the paranoid thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's got a little bit of a potboiler quality to it, but that's not to take anything away from it. I think it's still a really great movie, probably one of John Schlesinger's last really great movies.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that's, you guys know that story about the clash between Hoffman and Olivier on that movie, right? Hoffman was having trouble. I'll do it for the audience or whatever. But Hoffman was having trouble getting into his character, and Hoffman was doing the whole method thing and trying to ask why behind every line and everything, and he couldn't get it, and finally, Olivier just said, "Why don't you try acting, my boy?" So that just says it right there, the clash of those two acting styles right there.
Years later, like a couple of years ago, did they ask?
I think that story's a bit of an urban myth. You hear it in sort of every single acting school, and I think, he might have been making a joke or whatever.
Yeah.
That story was related to Daniel Day-Lewis, and they asked his opinion on it a couple of years ago, and Daniel Day-Lewis said, I think that Hoffman's exactly right, and I think it's diminishing what Laurence Olivier said. So
I think it was. I think it's more of a joke because there's always this. If there's a great book that I read earlier this year called Hellraisers about O'Toole, Burton, Oliver Reed, and Richard Harris, which deals with that generational shift in the British acting.
Yeah.
And I think Laurence Olivier was joking. And you think he has, you know, it is obviously they come from two totally different schools of thought on acting.
I do think at heart, actors, when they know that the other's working hard, I think that they respect each other.
Yeah.
I can see the exchange happening.
Yeah, oh, I can
between,
see it.
Yeah.
Scary
oh, I bet it
happens.
We just don't know the tone of voice behind it.
Yeah,
that's the
thing.
That's
what
we're
missing.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
Hook was, and Captain Hook seems like an interesting role for Hoffman, but the movie itself never really took flight, did it?
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
That's something that I thought you was dreadful in, that thing. Oh, yeah, terrible.
That's a movie where you have a big problem where your first 45 minutes to an hour is set up, and you're saying, can we please get this thing going?
Let me ask you this, though, about that film, because I'm not a big fan of the movie at all, but do you think it would have been interesting or if Dustin Hoffman would have played a character in his adult life, not just as Captain Hook, but if he was someone in the business world or someone he worked with maybe, would that have helped
maybe.
The movie?
Maybe. I don't know that it would help it. I think
I don't know what could help it, but I thought at the time that was my initial thing, just because I did the movie, there's something really just lackluster about that film. And of course, Roland's right about it. I'm going to agree with Roland 120%.
It's laborious. I mean, it's just, you know, slosh.
It's ugly to look at. It's ugly to look at. It's ugly to listen to. It's just a terrible, terrible movie all around.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, that's one movie I wish I could erase from my memory, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Just terrible. I mean, it was painful.
it was that back-to-back, like he made that and Always on Spielberg and that, you know, so Jurassic Park was in some ways a big comeback, a really powerful comeback for him. Not that he ever needed a comeback, but it was after those two films, the way they were received.
Schindler's List
that year. I mean, it was quite a year. 93 was quite a year for him.
Yeah.
And he, Hoffman, really ushered in the era of movie stars not being your typically handsome movie stars, which people always talk about in terms of the 70s. That's when the nature of the movie star changed. Hoffman broke that ground before any of the contemporaries because he had The Graduate in 67, years before Pacino came on the scene or De Niro really hit. He had Midnight Cowboy. I mean, this is major anti-movie star material, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of, you know, he was kind of that bridge from, you know, the sort of tall, you know, John Wayne type character that was the movie star, you know, tall, big guys, to smallish actors who were internally powerful, you know?
Right.
I mean, he's definitely, and of course it comes right down to it, like in 1969 when you know, John Wayne won the Oscar for True Grit over who should have won, which was Dustin Hoffman for Midnight Cowboy. So, like, you know, Hollywood had to put their chips in with John Wayne.
He was considered for the role of Michael Corleone in The Godfather.
Everybody
was. Yeah.
Everyone was, but I liked that. Kind of makes more sense. But I can't at the time. I could see where now was Coppola already directing at that time? Was he already attached as a director when they were thinking of Hoffman?
I don't know.
Because remember Robert Redford and Warren Beatty were considered, and Jack Nicholson was even considered, and I mean everyone. You're right. Everyone was considered for it. I mean, even the janitor Paramount was probably considered for it.
He was an early consideration to play the lead in Blade Runner.
That
would have been a very different movie.
That would have been
a very different movie.
Very strange.
to think of that.
He Hackman and Robert Duvall roomed together, obviously, when they were first starting out.
Yeah.
And among them, I mean, Hoffman was the first one to really hit it big, and probably the least, the one that they considered least likely among the three of them to do that. Isn't that always the way?
Yeah.
Have we talked about Papillon yet?
I mentioned it. It's one that I liked, and I do like that movie a lot.
Who directed that? Who directed Papillon?
It was Franklin
Schaffner.
That's right.
Okay.
The same director as Planet of the Apes.
The Boys from Brazil and Patton, yeah.
Right.
I think he's really great in that movie, and every time I read a review of that film, generally the review is middling to poor, and they always single out Hoffman's performance in that film as being one of its weak links, and I don't believe that at all. I think it's very strong, and he actually elicits, you know, he comes close to eliciting tears from me during a couple of key scenes in it. So I don't get what people don't like about Papillon.
I did not know that it was not liked. I've always heard it. That's another thing. Just in circles, that seen it as, you know, nothing less than well regarded, but. I do like it though. I like, you know, obviously anything with McQueen in it, I'm gonna gravitate towards. So
another following with Pacino, another mirror parallel with Pacino, and they haven't acted together before. They've been in Dick Tracy, you know. They're both in Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That'd be interesting. That would be a great comedic couple if you could get Pacino and Hoffman together, as a low life comedic. Friends or foils or something,
mm-hmm.
That would be beautiful.
I think they'd be interesting as brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
Stigmatic, too.
Pacino and Julie Christie were the original cast of Marathon Man.
That would have been a better movie, because I think Martha Keller is pretty...
Speaking of Martha Keller, Dustin Hoffman was the original for Bobby Deerfield with Martha
mm-hmm.
Keller.
That's right.
Still haven't seen that. I'm kind of curious to see that movie for some reason.
Yeah, you can pass.
Coming from
yeah, really?
Him, he said it. He said it, not me. He said it, so that's quite a statement from Jamie.
The great thing about Dustin Hoffman is, I mean, he's still working a lot. If you see his in development stuff, he's still got a major output. He wanted to do Merchant of Venice, the film version
mm-hmm.
that Pacino ended up doing. I mean, it goes on
that
and on and on.
That would have been just as interesting, too. I mean, that would have been.
Yeah,
better.
I mean, Hoffman is even more of an obvious choice than Pacino to play that
mm-hmm.
role, actually.
Yeah.
Why don't you think Hoffman doesn't go back to the stage?
I don't know.
That's a good question, Roland. I don't know.
I wonder if just, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit during the Gene Hackman show, but I just think that after a while, movie actors are just movie actors, and they can't, they're not sure if they even want to go back to the stage to try anything because they're so ingrained in that kind of performing, you know, that kind of intimate performing.
If you look to see who's on Broadway at any given time, there's a whole bunch of big A-list movie actors there. I mean, Denzel Washington. I mean, they all jump in and do plays.
Yeah, they're. I notice it's also rolling a lot of younger actors too, younger A-listers.
Pacino's going back this summer for Merchant of Venice, actually.
But he should. I would welcome
Pacino,
it. I mean, it's a good place to get recharged, re-enthused about these.
What's that, Roland?
Jamie, is Pacino going back to stage?
Yeah, Central Park. He's playing Merchant Shylock again in Merchant of Venice on stage.
What did he do with Chris? Who did it a couple in the 90s? There was, I think it was Macbeth or Othello, Christopher Walken and Raul Julia.
Yeah. Oh, God, that would have been...
That would have been.
I really wanted to see Raul Julia play Dracula on Broadway. That would have been amazing.
There's a guy who left us way too soon.
Yeah, really. I mean, massively. Let's close the show. Let's take this 215 area code phone call. It's busy night. 215, you're on the line.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, buddy. What's your name?
What's Oh, man. I'll tell you what, it's great to see someone actually putting a show on this website about Dustin Hoffman.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
I'm hoping maybe next week you guys can do Christopher Walken and do a whole two-hour
show. I'm
all for it. I'll tell you right now, he's awesome. Need more cowbell. Need more cowbell.
Well,
I was actually just looking up Dustin Hoffman, and apparently he's got the virus or something.
The virus.
Mm.
He's got a, I don't know, he's got a virus or something.
Dustin Hoffman has a virus?
You have a virus in the chat room.
What's your favorite Dustin Hoffman performance?
You know, the one where he's in that movie with the one with, you know, he's in the other movie, too.
Okay. I'll see you later, man. All right.
And there we have it.
What a great way to close the show.
Well, should we talk about, I think it was Joel who brought up in the chat room, we should talk about how he handles himself so coolly when the Lily Tomlin freakout video, David O. Russell on I Heart Huckabee.
Right,
hell yeah.
Right.
Doesn't he just kind of walk off set, or what
yeah,
does he do?
He really handles himself.
He freaking bolts, man.
Yeah.
And then Lily Tomlin gets on to him in the car,
yeah,
and he's like, use it, use it. She's like, screw you. Yeah.
That's funny.
There's got to be some karmic thing with his reputation for being difficult early on in his career and then being stuck in the latter part of his career with David O. Russell. There's got to be, like, karma going on there, right?
Yeah, it is. I guess. What is David? Now, David O. Russell's doing The Fighter. Is that his next film?
Yeah, The Fighter.
I don't, and his movie Nailed, like, it got nailed. I mean, it disappeared. It's nothing.
Yeah,
I don't even think he got to finish it.
It's like what we said, I think, when we first, I think it was one of the first things we talked about, actually, the first, that first summer we talked about it, or
yeah,
when that YouTube video talked about it. If it wouldn't matter so much if his movies, and I do think he's a good film director, but if his movies made money, this wouldn't matter. But because his movies don't make money, you said that it would be harder for him to, it would be harder for him to get a job.
Right.
And I'm amazed that he's making The Fighter, which was originally an Aronofsky film, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's getting Aronofsky's leftovers.
And you say that as flatteringly as possible.
I love both directors. I mean, as we both know, I love all these guys from like Nolan, all these guys from this the last 20 years and everything. I just I like the I Heart Huckabees a lot. I know a lot of people hated it. It was one of those very divisive movies.
Yeah. How you did?
I see. I mean, and I love. That's another thing. I want people to know. I love Roland, and we just almost everything. But I love Roland
really
because he calls into the show. Because we love our enemies more than we love our friends.
I always think the divisive movies are the ones to really look out for. You know?
Yeah, they're the best ones.
They are. Movies that have 50% of the people you talk to saying it was pure shit, and the other 50% of the people saying, I loved it, I'm going to see it again tonight.
They want you to come over and watch it with them.
Yeah. I mean,
I love that phone call. It's
yeah.
About time somebody does a show on Dustin Hoffman. I should have recognized that was sarcasm right away.
It was sarcasm, dude. It was total because I saw his name in the chat room, The Virus.
Right, right. All right, guys. I appreciate everyone calling in and giving their input.
All of you. Mm-hmm.
It's a good show once again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. We'll be back Sunday night. Our next actor that we're thank you all. Well, the next actor that we're doing a roundtable discussion on is Robert Duvall.
All right.
Yeah. So join us for that. I think we'll be back Sunday if we have something to talk about. So stay tuned. Roland, thank you, buddy,
much. Thank you. I've been looking forward to your call all day. No, I don't mean that. I don't think I'm being sarcastic.
I
love when Roland calls in. I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
You change into a completely different person, Jerry.
No, I did what I've been like. I think it's since the end of the summer. My anger and my fury has come out in full force, just because I got sick of lying. I think.
All right.
We're actually going to close tonight's show with one of your film scores that you provided.
Shit. Okay.
What, Jerry's film scores?
No, Dean.
No, one of yours, Dean.
Oh,
really?
Thank God. All right.
Cool.
All right, guys. We'll see you next show. Maybe Sunday, maybe Wednesday. Stay tuned to find out. And you'll find out the same time we do.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Edward D. Wood, Jr.?